Have you ever felt like a failure because you didn't ace standardized tests, attend an elite university, or make millions by your 20s? You're not alone. Our society has developed an unhealthy obsession with early achievement, creating a culture that celebrates prodigies while making late bloomers feel like they've somehow missed the boat. This pervasive mindset isn't just damaging to individuals, it's shortchanging society by devaluing the unique contributions that come from those who find their path later in life. Consider J.K. Rowling, who struggled through her teens with an ill mother and emotionally distant father. After a failed marriage, depression, and poverty, she discovered her hidden talent only when she allowed her imagination to wander. Or Ken Fisher, who flunked out of junior college and failed in his father's business before discovering his leadership potential at 30. Today, Rowling is the billionaire author of Harry Potter, and Fisher founded Fisher Investments, managing $100 billion worldwide. These stories of late-blooming success seem increasingly rare in our hyper-competitive culture, yet they're more necessary than ever. In a world that glorifies early achievement through endless 30 under 30 lists and teenage tech billionaires, we've created a damaging message. If you don't excel immediately, you've somehow failed permanently. The consequences are severe, skyrocketing rates of anxiety and depression among young people, with suicide rates tripling among college students. What if we've been getting it all wrong? What if the path to fulfillment and success isn't about racing to achieve arbitrary milestones by certain ages, but about discovering your unique gifts on your own timeline? Our cultural obsession with early achievement has exploded in recent decades. Google data shows the term wonderkind has increased 1,000% in media since 1960, reflecting society's growing fixation on youthful success. Young celebrities dominate entertainment, with teenage influencers commanding millions in sponsorships before they can vote. Athletes receive college scholarship offers at increasingly younger ages, some as young as 9, while youth sports have evolved into a $19 billion industry. Tech companies like Facebook and Google have median employee ages of 28 and 29, with compensation packages approaching $200,000, reinforcing the notion that success must come early. This obsession has transformed childhood activities from sources of passion into mere resume enhancers. Children as young as 5 are enrolled in academic enrichment programs, with parents viewing every activity through the lens of college admissions. Speaking of which, admissions have become dramatically more competitive. Stanford's acceptance rate dropped from 22% in 1990 to just 4.6% today, while Harvard rejected 95% of applicants with perfect SAT scores. Even former backup schools now reject 2/3 of applicants. This pressure has spawned billion-dollar industries in test prep, child enhancement products, and youth athletics, where parents spend up to 10% of income on deliberate practice regimens, including private coaches, specialized camps, and year-round training programs. The psychological consequences are alarming. Medication rates for ADD are 14 times higher than in the UK, with some districts reporting up to 20% of students on performance-enhancing medications. Depression has increased 70% in 20 years, particularly among high-achieving students at elite schools. Teen suicide rates have risen 40% for boys and doubled for girls between 2007-2015, with pressure to achieve cited as a major factor. Today's youth are more focused on extrinsic goals like wealth and status than intrinsic development, becoming increasingly risk-averse and delaying traditional markers of adulthood like marriage, homeownership, and career commitment. This cultural shift has created unrealistic expectations for young people, demanding they succeed immediately or face failure forever. The average age of successful startup founders is actually 45. Yet the media perpetuates the myth of the 20-something genius. Today's 20-somethings feel paralyzed by anxiety, becoming more risk-averse than any generation since the Great Depression. They're delaying major life decisions, less likely to move for opportunities, and increasingly living with parents at rates higher than during the actual Great Depression, with 52% of young adults now living with parents. Technology companies particularly exemplify age discrimination, with median employee ages at major firms typically 32 or younger. Silicon Valley embraces the dark ethos that people over 45 basically die in terms of new ideas, despite evidence showing older workers often outperform younger ones in innovation and productivity. Older tech workers resort to disguising their age through professional photos, adopting younger dress codes, and even undergoing cosmetic procedures, fighting against pervasive assumptions that they're slow, rigid, and unable to collaborate with younger colleagues. Some report being told directly they're too experienced, or finding job listings explicitly seeking digital natives, code for young workers. How did we become so obsessed with measuring human potential through standardized metrics? The roots go back to the early 20th century, when Alfred Binet developed the world's first intelligence test in 1905. Crucially, Binet saw his test as a snapshot in time, never implying it would predict a child's intelligence throughout their lifetime. This important distinction was lost when intelligence testing spread to America. Lewis Terman revised Binet's test into the Stanford-Binet IQ test, believing it could measure innate brain capacity. During World War I, the test was administered to 1.7 million soldiers to determine their best placement in the military. Carl Brigham developed the SAT for the U.S. Army in 1926, initially embracing similar views before later rejecting them, calling his test a glorious fallacy that didn't measure native intelligence. Harvard President James Bryant Conant and Assistant Dean Henry Chauncey rescued the SAT's reputation in the 1930s. Motivated by class resentment against wealthy Harvard students who lived privileged lives during the Great Depression, they promoted the SAT as a weapon against lazy aristocracy, believing in an aristocratic of intellect. By the 1960s, the SAT had transformed elite university admissions, replacing old money connections with test scores as the primary gatekeeper. Ironically, in 1921, Lewis Terman began the first longitudinal study of high IQ individuals, tracking over 1,500 gifted children. Decades later, the results revealed these high IQ individuals weren't particularly special in their achievements, with most having ordinary careers. A chastened Terman eventually admitted that intellect and achievement are far from perfectly correlated. Despite this failure as a predictive instrument, America's zeal for testing only grew, from 80,000 SAT takers in 1951 to 1.7 million by 2015. Two scientists in 1975 articulated the dysfunction of standardized measurement. Donald Campbell formulated Campbell's Law. The more any quantitative social indicator is used for social decision-making, the more subject it will be to corruption. Similarly, Charles Goodhart developed Goodhart's Law. Any measure used for control is unreliable. Once high scores become the goal, the measurement loses validity. Our rigid educational pathways stem from Frederick Taylor's scientific management principles of the early 1900s. Taylor's declaration that, in the future, the system must be first, transformed factory work by measuring and controlling every worker action. This approach found its greatest realization in Henry Ford's assembly plants and, surprisingly, in education, through John Franklin Bobbitt's 1912 publication, The Elimination of Waste in Education, which argued schools should operate like efficient businesses. This created our current educational model. Fixed class durations, rigid semesters, and standardized courses ensuring every student graduates at the same age with presumably identical knowledge, despite the obvious reality that we all learn differently and at different paces. Our obsession with early blooming collides with three major realities. Adolescents are maturing into cognitive and emotional adulthood later than previous generations. Technology demands ongoing career reinvention, making early demonstrated skills increasingly perishable. And research shows cognitive abilities we lose with age are offset by new abilities we gain throughout life. Scientists have discovered that between adolescence and adulthood lies a crucial developmental period. The prefrontal cortex, comprising nearly one-third of the human neocortex, is the last brain region to mature, often not completing development until the mid-20s or later. This region controls executive functions like planning, emotional regulation, and consequence assessment. An NIH study of 5,000 children revealed a significant time lag between limbic system development, emotions, and prefrontal cortex maturation, rational thinking, explaining why many 18 to 25-year-olds struggle with responsible judgment, despite being measured and sorted for lifelong trajectories through tests and interviews. Modern young adults are taking significantly longer to reach traditional markers of adulthood. Compared to their parents' generation, today's 25-year-olds are twice as likely to remain in school, 50% more likely to receive parental financial support, and only half as likely to be married. Psychologist Jeffrey Arnett argues we should recognize emerging adulthood as a distinct life stage between 18 and 30, a period characterized by identity exploration, instability, and self-focus. Taking time away from traditional education paths can be transformative. Mormon missions, Peace Corps, military service, and gap years all provide young adults with opportunities to develop maturity and skills outside classroom settings. Research shows these experiences yield impressive benefits. 97% of gap year participants report increased maturity, 96% greater self-confidence, and 84% acquire skills that enhance career success. Contrary to Silicon Valley mythology, our cognitive abilities don't peak early and decline steadily. Research reveals we have multiple cognitive peaks throughout life. We can enjoy multiple brain peaks when we invest in our health, curiosity, and learning. Research identifies two types of intelligence. Fluid intelligence, GF, our ability to reason and solve novel problems, which peaks earlier, and crystallized intelligence, GC, our accumulated knowledge and experience, which continues rising into middle age and beyond. Georgia Tech professor Philip Ackerman shows older adults compensate for declining GF by leveraging their superior GC in knowledge-dependent jobs like teaching, law, and consulting. Contrary to popular belief, creativity and innovation don't decline sharply with age. Hector Zennel's research on random thinking linked to creativity found peak performance at 25, but only slight decline through 160s. Neuropsychologist Elkanon Boldberg argues our creative yield actually increases with age as our salience network connects novel perceptions with stored patterns and experiences. The evidence is compelling. Nobel Prize winners' average age of discovery is 39, with a 55-year-old as likely to make a breakthrough as someone 25. The Information Technology and Innovation Foundation found peak innovation occurs in our late 40s, supported by the average U.S. patent applicant age of 47. Late bloomers possess unique strengths that deserve recognition and celebration. These qualities become increasingly valuable in a complex work environment where AI is replacing rules-based careers. Curiosity, the first late bloomer strength, is often sacrificed on the early blooming conveyor belt that demands determined focus over exploration. CEOs increasingly value curiosity over raw intelligence. Genentech's Bill Anderson and Intuit's Brad Smith both prioritize curiosity in employees. It's the overlooked key to business innovation that requires moral courage and independence of mind. Curiosity creates a self-reinforcing feedback loop of motivation and learning, providing dopamine hits that continue throughout life. Compassion, the second late bloomer strength, goes beyond empathy to generate action that helps others. Late bloomers often develop greater compassion through life's ups and downs, showing more reflective thinking and diminished ego-centeredness. Research shows compassionate managers are perceived as better leaders, with studies indicating compassionate leadership correlates with reduced sick leave, higher employee retention and performance, and significantly better financial results. With one study finding compassionate CEOs return 758% over 10 years versus 128% for the S&P 500. Resilience, the third late bloomer strength, is that ineffable quality that allows some people to be knocked down by life and come back stronger than ever. This isn't passive, but an active process of responding to adversity with concerted action. Late bloomers, more familiar with setbacks, develop better emotional regulation tools and perspective with age. Unlike early bloomers who often take full credit for success and struggle with setbacks, late bloomers tend to be more circumspect about both success and failure. Equanimity, mental calmness and composure during difficult situations, emerges as a distinct late bloomer strength. Research shows that calm leaders are more effective, as optimal performance degrades when emotions run too strong. We become better problem solvers and listeners when calm, and people naturally gravitate toward composed leaders during crises. This advantage develops naturally as we age, making it a particular strength for late bloomers. Insight isn't merely sudden perception, but draws on our full mental library of experience and patterns. Neuroscientist L. Conan Goldberg explains that while the right brain processes novelty, the left brain stores memories and patterns. As we age, our salience network improves at judging which novel perceptions are actually useful. While younger people may have more novel perceptions, late bloomers excel at discerning which ones matter. Wisdom, the pinnacle of human attainment across cultures and time, emerges as a quintessential late bloomer strength. Only empirically studied in the past 40 years, wisdom has been defined by researchers as expert knowledge concerning the fundamental pragmatics of life and the ability to manage ambiguity. Unlike test scores or elite degrees, wisdom develops through life's challenges and experiences. Research shows it increases rather than declines with age, peaking between 40 and 50 before maintaining a high plateau. Culture, whether family, peer, or societal, profoundly influences our self-perception and possibilities. It transmits both spoken and unspoken expectations that can either nurture or limit our potential. For late bloomers especially, examining these cultural influences is crucial to understanding what might be holding us back from discovering our destiny and fulfilling our potential. The first cultural influence we encounter is family. Most families are neither perfect nor terrible. They're functional and supportive while simultaneously transmitting some unhelpful qualities: irrational thinking, petty biases, harmful belief systems, and parental missteps. To fully bloom, we must declare independence from our family's limitations without rejecting their love. As we grow up, we shift from family socialization to seeking acceptance from wider communities. Communities influence our achievement, health, income, and well-being. The peer pressure that begins in adolescence continues throughout adulthood as we surround ourselves with similar people and conform to group behaviors. Not all communities support growth. Some can become so dysfunctional they no longer nurture individual success. Even affluent communities can trap people on narrow conveyor belts of achievement that leave little room for self-exploration. Society represents our broadest level of cultural identity, providing persistent standards, mores, and expectations that touch nearly every dimension of life. The average American spends nearly 11 hours daily consuming media, which increasingly push us to identify with certain group norms while constructing our social reality. Social media compounds this by creating a culture of comparison where people present curated, idealized versions of themselves. These media-driven norms directly impact late bloomers by defining acceptable timelines for success, careers, and life milestones, making those on slower paths feel inadequate or like failures. Social norms function as society's unstated rules that regulate conduct and underlie everything from social interactions to personal preferences. Their power stems from our fundamental need to belong. Solomon Asch's classic 1951 experiment demonstrated this when 75% of subjects gave obviously wrong answers to conform with a group. Most participants knew they were wrong, but feared being thought peculiar. Breaking from cultural norms proves extraordinarily difficult because we're fundamentally social creatures whose identity is shaped by our connections. Society enforces conformity through consequences ranging from eye rolls to ostracism to persecution. This creates an iron grip of culture through family, community, and societal pressure, presenting a formidable challenge for late bloomers who develop on different timetables and need to break free from the dominant culture's conveyor belt to shape their own fates.
Our culture venerates persistence and condemns quitting, but for late bloomers, strategic quitting may be the key to success. Quitting the wrong path, job, class, or relationships can be necessary to shape our own fate, especially when cultural norms favor early achievers. While perseverance has value, our societal obsession with unyielding determination often leads to counterproductive outcomes, causing people to stay in unfulfilling careers, toxic relationships, or misaligned educational paths far longer than beneficial. Research reveals three uncomfortable truths about determination. Willpower is a limited resource. Quitting can be healthy. And quitting often produces better results than doggedness. Roy Baumeister's influential experiments demonstrated ego depletion through multiple studies, most famously when participants forced to eat radishes instead of chocolate subsequently gave up much faster on puzzles than those who ate sweets. Similar experiments involving self-control tasks like resisting temptation, maintaining emotional control, and making difficult decisions all showed the same pattern. Willpower depletes like a battery, making determination a scarce and precious resource rather than an infinite well. We each possess only a finite reserve of willpower and determination, which operates much like a daily energy budget. Studies show that people typically experience the highest levels of willpower in the morning, with gradual decline throughout the day. This explains why diet plans often fail in the evening and why important decisions are best made earlier in the day. Contrary to popular belief, willpower isn't a muscle that can be indefinitely strengthened. It's a limited resource that depletes when we force ourselves to pursue paths that don't align with our natural inclinations. Professional athletes, successful entrepreneurs, and creative professionals often succeed not through pure determination, but by aligning their efforts with their natural talents and interests. Quitting unattainable goals isn't just emotionally liberating, it's physically healing. Longitudinal studies tracking subjects from adolescence through older adulthood reveal that goal disengagement correlates with healthier hormonal patterns, better sleep efficiency, and reduced depression. Research at Concordia University found that people who were better at disengaging from unattainable goals had lower levels of C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation linked to various health problems. Conversely, misplaced tenacity can trigger biological processes in our endocrine and immune systems that increase vulnerability to health problems like asthma, cardiovascular issues, and reduced immune function. Our resistance to quitting stems from cognitive biases, like the sunk cost fallacy, our tendency to continue investing in something because of what we've already put into it. Research by psychologists Hal Arkus and Catherine Bloomer shows adults are worse at considering sunk costs than children or dogs, often choosing less enjoyable options simply because they've invested more in them. This manifests in countless ways: staying in unfulfilling relationships because of time invested, continuing education programs that no longer serve our goals, or maintaining failing businesses despite mounting losses. Meanwhile, opportunity cost, what we forfeit by not pursuing better alternatives, often goes unconsidered, leading to years or decades of missed opportunities. Quitting isn't weakness, it's honesty and personal empowerment. For late bloomers, quitting isn't necessarily forever.
Many quit school only to return later with clearer purpose, showing that quitting can be a form of patience. Famous examples include Steve Jobs dropping out of Reed College, only to audit calligraphy classes that later influenced Apple's design philosophy. Through strategic quitting and experimentation, initial interests can evolve into true passions, leading to more authentic and fulfilling life paths. The key is learning to distinguish between productive persistence and counterproductive stubbornness. Sometimes late bloomers need to change their environment to reach their full potential. Like a flowering plant that's outgrown its container, we may need to repot ourselves when our growth is constrained by others' outdated perceptions. When we improve ourselves, we risk upsetting social hierarchies, what psychologists call crab pot syndrome, where group members pull down anyone trying to rise above. People who knew us in our pre-blooming phase often unconsciously keep us locked in outdated roles. Research confirms that people thrive when there's a good fit between person and environment. Studies show that in career changes, person-to-organization fit matters more than person-to-job fit. The central question late bloomers must ask is, am I in the best possible pot to bloom? Some people, like dandelions, can flourish anywhere, while others, like orchids, require specific conditions. For mid-career late bloomers with financial responsibilities, radical career changes are risky. Instead, adjacent repotting offers a safer path, moving to similar work that leverages existing skills. When your environment stifles growth, but a complete break seems excessive, peer groups offer a middle path. Organizations like Toastmasters, Alcoholics Anonymous, Vistage International for small business owners, and church groups provide safe spaces to explore options with others facing similar challenges. Late bloomers can persist through adversity for two key reasons. First, we are natural storytellers. The default mode of human cognition is narrative, helping us make reason from chaos and assign causality to random events. Second, persistence itself is plastic and grows with experience as we age. The stories we tell ourselves shape our attitudes and enhance well-being. If we change our story, we can change our behavior and life. Late bloomers must recognize we're fundamentally different from early bloomers. We can't follow the early bloomer model and hope to succeed. It will burn up our persistence and stunt exploration. Instead, we must reflect on our differences and acknowledge our unique gifts. The key is rediscovering a narrative that fits your truest self. Our future story is written in pencil, not carved in stone. There is no fixed chronology to self-determination, no age limit for breakthroughs. Research confirms that as we lose some capabilities with age, we gain others that far outweigh what's lost. The question isn't what we can accomplish despite our nature and experiences, but because of them. Late bloomers have a different kind of power, the power to renounce culturally defined success timelines and embrace life's actual twists and turns. It's the power to explore, to be an individual, to know and value ourselves. Despite what our early achievement culture preaches, life can't be perfectly planned. There isn't a single path to self-realization. We're gifted. We're late bloomers. We have amazing destinies to follow.